वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, Text 2, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Mahat Sevang Dwaram Ahur Vimuktes Tamo Dwaram Yoshitam Sangi Sangam Mahantaste samachita prashanta Vimanyava suhrida sadhavaye sadhavoye. Translation: One can attain the path of liberation from material bondage only by rendering service to highly advanced spiritual personalities. These personalities are impersonalists and devotees. Whether one wants to merge into the Lord's existence or wants to associate with the personality of Godhead, one should render service to the Mahatmas. For those who are not interested in such activities, who associate with people fond of women and sex, the path to hell is wide open. The Mahatmas are equipoised. They do not see any difference between one living entity and another. They are very peaceful and are fully engaged in devotional service. They are devoid of anger and they work for the benefit of everyone. They do not behave in any abominable way. Such people are known as Mahatmas. Purport: The human body is like a junction. One may either take the path of liberation or the path leading to a hellish condition. How one can take these paths is described herein. On the path of liberation, one associates with Mahatmas, and on the path of bondage, one associates with those attached to sense gratification and women. There are two types of Mahatmas: the impersonalist and the devotee. Although their ultimate goal is different, the process of emancipation is almost the same. Both want eternal happiness. One seeks happiness in impersonal Brahman, and the other seeks happiness in the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As described in the first verse, Brahma Sokhyam. Brahman means spiritual or eternal. Both the impersonalist. In any case, it is advised that one become perfect. In the words of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Asat Sanga Tyag E Vaishnav Achar, Stri Sangi Ek Asadhu Krishna Bhaktaar. To remain unattached to the modes of material nature, one should avoid associating with those who are asat, materialistic. There are two kinds of materialists. One is attached to women and sense gratification, and the other is simply a non-devotee. On the positive side is association with Mahatmas, and on the negative side is the avoidance of non-devotees and women hunters. These first few verses of the fifth chapter of the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, several of them are among the most quoted by Srila Prabhupada, including the verse that we're reading today, especially the first two lines of this verse. Srila Prabhupada often quoted, and we're glad that he did, because it's what everyone in material life needs to hear. Such important information. These verses at the beginning of the fifth of this chapter, they stress the need for spiritual life, and that material attachment, specifically that centered on sex, which is or sex life, as Prabhupada used to say, sexual attraction, that is the center of all material attachment. It is the cause of bondage in this material world. So, in the first verse, which was presumably read yesterday, here, Rishabhdev, the personality of Godhead, has directed that one should not live for sense gratification, one should live for the sake of getting liberation from this material world. And in this verse, he states the process of liberation is dependent on association with great persons, and association with materialistic people is the path to hell. So, as I said, we're very grateful to Srila Prabhupada, who certainly was a Mahatma of the type that's being described here. Of course, he was a shocking Mahatma, shocked many people, inasmuch as he spoke these teachings. And often, most of the time, he spoke very clearly and straightforwardly, as Rishabhdev did. And generally people think that saintly persons are those who just smile and talk sweet words and maybe tell a lot of stories and make everyone feel nice. We're very grateful that Srila Prabhupada was not this kind of make-you-feel-good Swami, but rather he, as a genuine sadhu, who was genuinely suhridaha, this word is mentioned here, genuinely the well-wisher of all, spoke what people needed to hear. Generally we think a saintly person is someone who's they have a kind of dreamy look on their face, and they're very sweet, sickly sweet. Srila Prabhupada was very practical in pinpointing or taking the light of the Bhagavatam and focusing that to pinpoint the disease of material life that we're all suffering from, which is sexual attraction. And Srila Prabhupada himself clearly was free from that, which isn't such a, it's not such an easy achievement to be free from material attachment. One might even not be grossly attached to gross sexual indulgence, but as will be pointed out in another of the verses in this early section of the Bhagavatam, just after this comes the statement that Pungsastriya Mituni Bhavametam Tayoraho Hridaya Grantimahu, that materialistic life is based on sexual attraction. But it's not only that. That sexual attraction expands as ato griha kshetra sutap devitaya, attraction to home, wealth, women, family, friends, money. And janasya moho yam aham mameti, and thus the illusion of people or of a person is defined in terms of me and mine. So someone may seem to be very, they may even think, well, you know, I'm not that much interested in, not grossly falling down, or, but attraction to all these things, home, family, wealth, money, all these things. In the Western world, actually all over the world, I think he even got a Nobel Prize maybe. There's one Dalai Lama who's said to be a very saintly person, but he's totally in the bodily concept of life because he's free Tibet. That's his main thing that he talks about. Not that anyone really cares that much, but I mean, a few people go around with banners, but the governments of the world don't care too much about it. But he's fully in the consciousness that he's Tibetan and working for the cause of the Tibetan people. So, just another murha, that's all. Just another idiot. But because he wears some robes and smiles and says things like peace, and I don't know what he says, but I presume that it's what all these cheetahs do. They all talk about peace and love and compassion and brotherliness and all this. But they have no actual information of the purpose of life. So, we can measure our spiritual advancement, that how much we're free from material attraction. That is a test. It's not necessarily someone who can sing very nicely or speak very nicely or tell lots of stories, but one has to see how one's factually free from material attachment. And we may not even be able to see it ourselves. Generally we can't. Generally everyone thinks, anyone who's on the spiritual path generally always thinks they're much more advanced than they actually are. And when the test comes, then we'll see. Sometimes the test comes in like you miss prasadam or something, and then all of a sudden all your high-level Krishna consciousness gets brought down to the lower modes of nature. So actually to be on that level of a great Paramahamsa like Prabhupada, it's not, I say like Prabhupada, who is there like Prabhupada? But anyway, it's a mode of speaking. But such a great person who is only distributing Krishna consciousness to others and empowered by Krishna to present all these points very clearly. We see Srila Prabhupada's purports are clear like a bell, as the saying goes. It's just very pure sound. Anyone who hears that, who can open their ear to hear this message, they cannot but be affected. No one speaks like this. Who, among all the religiousness in the world, they may say that, yes, no sex outside of marriage, but then they don't really know why. Even the Catholic Church, and they're talking about how this. They have the idea that sex is for pleasure and for procreation, but then they don't understand that it's the pleasure, as the Bhagavatam states, of the camel sucking his own blood. It's not actually pleasurable. In other words, they have no idea of what is actual spiritual knowledge. And thus they remain in ignorance until they get this actual knowledge. We were discussing yesterday how in the Western world now there's big debate is becoming more and more prominent between atheists and theists, because with intelligent design theory becoming prominent, and then in this Bush government in America was staunchly fundamentalist Christian. So atheists, they're making a comeback. They're getting themselves organized and making propaganda, and they want to get their rights. Like they're discriminated against. People in America think many people think you're very bad. So they think, just like the homosexuals, they made propaganda, and now people think it's okay to be a homosexual. So they should make propaganda, and probably within a few years, people will think it's okay to be an atheist. That's their idea. So it's a big debate, but actually the very reason that people became atheists, or the whole enlightenment as it's called, that people started, the atheistic trend began after what they call the Dark Ages, called the Dark Ages because people believed in God, I guess, or there wasn't any progress. So what they call the Enlightenment was that people started to disbelieve in the Bible and believe more in human reason, as they call it. But So practically for like 700-800 years in the Western world, in Europe, there's been this division between the proponents of human reason and the proponents of faith in God. And now it's coming to a head again. But the very reason that people gave up believing in God is the same reason it's still there, because the way God and religion is presented in the Christian faith is so stupid that any intelligent person should reject it. They don't have any idea who is God, but then you see here, this is the science of God realization, which is presented in Srila Prabhupada's books. And in India also, people, obviously, they're you can hear from this loudspeaker, this is Hindu religion, what it's come to. Here's the land of Ramanujacharya. He was prominent in this area, and this is religion. And then there's so many bogus sadhus. One of them is well known for dancing around with his female disciples. Still people worship him because they're so foolish. The lack of spiritual knowledge is striking. For those who have any idea what spiritual knowledge is, most people don't know. To believe in God, do you believe in God or not believe? But what's the question? As Prabhupada would often say, what's the question of belief? There's no question of belief. If you hear it, if you take the understanding from a self-realized soul, there's no question of belief. It's not a question of belief. It's just a fact that's to be accepted. But it's increasingly difficult for people to even if it's presented to them in a dispassionate, intelligent way, it's increasingly difficult for people to even understand that, because their powers of understanding anything beyond the sensory input that their senses receive, they don't have any capacity for clear, straightforward thinking. And I see that even among our devotees. Many of our devotees, difficult to have a straightforward philosophical discussion with them, because they bring in all these words like compassion, which they have no idea what it means. It's just used as a vague term, not defined, not in the way that it's defined by the acharyas or by Shastra. So that if, for instance, if you start to state the truth, which we're supposed to do all the time, and the truth as is stated here in this section of Bhagavatam and all through the Bhagavatam is shocking and unpalatable for everyone who's addicted to untruth, which means everyone in this world. And then when you start saying this, then people say, oh, you're not being compassionate. Why are you so harsh? So they're taken up by the one prominent form of modern illusion that more important than the fact is the feeling. Everything should feel good. So this is like the someone listening to pleasant music while he's being beaten with whips. You're on your way to hell being whipped, but there's very nice music. Just like in the, what's that, Auschwitz? Or what's that called? Auschwitz. They'd take the Jewish people to the gas chambers and they'd have a live orchestra playing. Nice music playing as they're sent to the gas chambers. That must be the second most famous place in Poland, after Warszawa, maybe even more famous. So people can't understand because they're materially attached. And even for our devotees, it's the inability to think clearly and plainly along the line of Shastra. It's just another sign of material attachment, actually. And how deep that may go, we may not know. Often we, just like someone may say, well, it's better for my spiritual life to... And then after that comes some kind of plan they have for sense gratification. They conflate the two ideas within their minds. I'm doing this, I'm doing that, it's all for spiritual realization, but actually they can't see clearly themselves. They're mixing it up, their own plans for sense gratification. Oh, I think I... Talking about devotees who are attached to that which is against their self-interest. Many years ago, it must have been late 1970s or early 1980s, I heard in a class by Bhakti Charu Maharaj, he told a story which I've since told several times, which is devastating to householders. They really don't like it at all. But I recently read the actual version of it. It's slightly different from the way Maharaj told it. But it goes to show how even people with the opportunity to associate with spiritually advanced persons, due to material attachment, they may go down and down and down. So I'll just go through this. It's a story in the Vallabh Sampradaya concerning Vitalnath, who was the son of Vallabhacharya and a empowered preacher, had many disciples. So he went to a place and someone came to him and said, I'd like to be your disciple. So he initiated him. He used to initiate every day. He wouldn't eat unless he initiated someone, at least one person a day. He would go around and preach. And that was quite common in previous times, that people would just meet a sadhu and be initiated. And then they'd follow strictly. But that's not uncommon in the modern age, but they don't follow strictly, and there's nothing to follow strictly, so it's kind of meaningless. But in a culture where the importance of spiritual advancement was known, and people took it very seriously. So they have a guru, and they're supposed to follow all these things. So anyway, Virtal, he initiated someone, and he said, well, because he was out on tour, he was traveling, he said, okay, well, you come with me to Gokul, which at that time was the seat of the Sampradaya. Gokul, you all know, that's in the greater Vrindavan area, in Vrajamandala. So he said, well, no, I have a lot of family affairs. I'll go a little later. So after some time, one renunciate of that Sampradaya. I don't know, there aren't any now. The idea of renunciation went out a long time ago. In fact, I think it went out with Vitalnath himself. Anyway, don't want to talk about that. So he went to that same town where that man was, and he said, well, you're initiated, you should come to Gokul and have darshan. He said, no, I have to get married. He was still a young man, so no, let me get married first and then I'll go. So that renunciant, when he himself went to Gokul, he met Vitalnath. So Vitalnath said, okay, it's your job to deliver this soul. He's not so enthusiastic, it seems. So after some time, that renunciant went back and he saw the man was married, so he said, okay, now you should come. So you said you'd come when you're married. He said, no. Let me have a son first, then I'll go. So it went on like this. The renunciant would go away and come back, and every time he would have an excuse, this man, disciple, supposed to be a disciple. Next time he came, he said, oh, now we have a son, so now come. He said, no, well, let him grow up a bit, and let me get him settled, and then I can come. So he came back, and the renunciant came back again, and the son was grown up and settled. But the man said, no, I want to have a grandson. Let me at least see my grandson. So the next time he came in, renunciant came, and he had a grandson. He said, all right, now you come. He said, no, I like playing with my grandson. I'll go after a little time. Now he's old. So the renunciant came again, and he didn't find him. He was dead. But he did see a snake in the courtyard, and he, by his spiritual vision, he could understand, that's the same man. He said, come on, now you should come. He said, no, I'm protecting the family treasure. So, then again he came, and he changed bodies again and become a dog. He said, now come. No, there are so many thieves and rogues, and I have to protect the family. Then again he came and he found he'd become a bug in the dream. He said, now come. He said, no, it's quite nice here, actually. I like, you know, there's remnants of food come down. I get to eat them. So then the renunciant, he caught that bug and put it, he was like a water bug living in the dream, put him in a bottle and took him to Gokul and then brought him to Vitalna. Vitalna said, okay, put him in the Yamuna. Then he got put in the Yamuna, and then he got delivered. So, well, one thing is that somehow by the mercy of the devotees, he got delivered, even against his own will. But that's unusual. But the point is, we have so many attachments. And I see that often. It's like the plan of Maya. That people, they're married, they have children, they're devotees, they're planning to retire. As soon as their children grow older, then they'll engage in full-time devotional service. Their children get old, they get married, they're just about to retire, and then grandchildren, and they're caught all over again. They're caught in the same thing. Now they have to look after the grandchildren, and they get bound up in that affection. And who else will do it if I don't do it, and we have to help them, it's our duty, blah, blah, blah. And in the meantime, death comes, and they didn't make the detachment from this material world, which is required to become Krishna conscious, to become spiritually realized. Either here, Prabhupada says, he says the mahantas or mahatmas, they can be impersonalists or devotees. Even impersonalists who are seriously trying to get free from sexual desires, they're also considered mahatmas. For that reason, Prabhupada says here in the purport, although their ultimate goal is different, the process of emancipation is almost the same, Prabhupada says here about impersonalists and devotees. Almost the same in as much as you have to get free from material desires. And then what happens after that? As Prabhupada says elsewhere, that the philosophy of impersonalism and of Vaishnavism, it's the same up to the point of liberation. In other words, you understand that material life is miserable. We're spiritual by nature. We have to get free from material attachment and become situated in spiritual consciousness. And what is the nature of that spiritual consciousness, and what is to be attained by being situated in that spiritual consciousness? There's a great divide between the devotees and the impersonalists. But the fact that this material world is miserable and we don't belong here, we have to get free from material attachments and become liberated from material consciousness, that is accepted both by impersonalists and by devotees. But it's not such an easy thing. It's not such an easy thing. We see many times devotees, they seem to be doing pretty well. They are doing nicely and seem to be going along quite well. But Maya has her own way of working. Many different ways she can come and influence the consciousness. But then we say different ways, but in the end it all comes down to the same. By the time Maya has twisted our consciousness and taken, and it may be even in the name of something very good, that we want to do something good, just like the the devotee, there's some nice young girl coming, and the devotee wants to preach to her, and you can see it coming, that, oh, she's very sincere, and then, you know, the next thing, he's married to her. Because that's the way material attraction works. Even the motive might be good, but there are guidelines in Shastra also. That even your motive may be good, you may think, well, I only want to preach and help this person, but we should know our limits also. I mean, not everyone's on the level of Narad Muni, who took Kayadhu, the wife of Hiranyakashipu, in his ashram, which is completely forbidden for brahmacharis, but he did it. And for the liberated souls, they don't have to, and they don't always follow all the rules and regulations. Narad Muni generally does, but in this case, because he wanted to, and he wasn't that much interested in Kayadhu, he wanted to instruct Prahlad in the womb. For that purpose, he did that, and no one ever blamed Narad Muni for that. But for anyone else, it means there's going to be trouble. That matra swasra duhitra va naviviktasano bhavet. Balavan, Prabhupada would always quote like this, balavan indriya gramo vidvam sham api karshati. One should not sit, or one should not become physically very close even to one's mother, sister or daughter, because the senses are so strong that even a learned person becomes disturbed. Even it doesn't seem possible that you could become, senses could be disturbed by sitting close to your mother, sister or daughter, but the Shastra says so, and what to speak of anyone else. So one should be very careful. In the modern age, people, they don't agree with this. Until recently in India, there was no question of, well, even going back a little further, there was no question of women going out alone by themselves anyway. And then when they started going to school and this and that, but there was no question of the boys and girls speaking in the school, or you couldn't just walk up to a woman on the street and talk to her. Now in India, of course, things have changed. But that culture was there. It's probably in the West also, at some point in time. Because that's human culture, and the human culture has gone down a long way. So it's a common thing nowadays, or it's just considered completely normal, that men and women, they mix and they talk with each other, but for spiritual consciousness, or even just for steady human consciousness, it destroys spiritual life. They have this silly idea, not just silly, incredibly foolish idea that men and women are supposed to be equal in all respects, so they put women in the army to fight, the American army to fight in Iraq. And they're, you know, all these intelligent people, and they're disturbed at the rate of rape. You know, it's just not, you put men and women, they're living together, and they're just pretending that it's all the same. But you know, men are attracted to women, and women are attracted to men, and that's the way the material bodies are made. And then they're saying, oh, yeah, it's very bad. It's all, you know, what do you expect? It's so foolish. So foolish. So people don't understand even these basic things. There was a time when people, not so long ago, when people could understand. Even in the Islamic world at the present time, many people may understand this better, that men and women are not supposed to be mixed up. Otherwise, trouble. Guaranteed. Material desires will increase. So, one should associate with persons who are beyond that desire. One should not increase the desire. One should act in certain ways, or that desire is not inflamed. One should be very careful and take shelter of devotees who are actually beyond that, which it's not so easy. It's easier to talk about it than to actually be free from material desire. But at least one should talk about it, because if we don't talk about it, we're not going to be, how are we ever going to get free of material desire if we don't talk about these things? That's why I have some objection to those devotees who only like to hear classes which are nice, and they only like to hear stories, and there should be a lot of jokes. And wait a minute, this self-realization, it's a serious business. We've got to get free from material desire. It's not something that you can do just by telling one or two jokes, or even telling stories of Krishna's pastimes. Okay, that's there. We're not saying there shouldn't be any jokes. But these points, who's going to discuss this? Who's going to discuss how are we becoming free from sexual desire? How much are we free? Srila Prabhupada said we should he is recorded as saying that the whole world is going on this vagina problem. This should be discussed regularly in our classes. This is kirtan, Prabhupada said. You say, how is that kirtan? Kirtan means glorifying Krishna. Kirtan means glorifying Krishna. Part of the glorification of Krishna is to speak his teachings. These are his teachings. So that's also glorification of Krishna. Another point is that we can't actually enter into the understanding of the glorification of Krishna until we become detached from the desire. Not just from sense gratification, but from the desire for sense gratification. So that is possible if we adopt certain procedures in our life before becoming free from sense gratification. And we have to discuss these points also. As Rishabhdev himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, discusses here, as Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas discuss. Yeah, we should discuss these things. Otherwise, it doesn't just happen by magic that we become free from material desire. It's not an easy thing. Not an easy thing. It may take many lifetimes, or by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it may come very quickly also. But part of that process is discussing these points. And as I was saying, these verses in the beginning of this chapter, Srila Prabhupada often quoted them. Those who read Prabhupada's books and listen to his conversations and his lectures, they'll know that these verses. The one before this, Nunang Pramata Kurute Vikaram. No, that's not before that. It's Nayam Deho Bhajang Riloke. Nayam deha deha bhajang riloke kashtan kaman arhate vidbhujam ye tapodivyam putraka yena sattvam shudyad yasmat brahma sokyam tunantam. I left one word out. No, I didn't. Lord Rishabhdev told his sons, my dear boys, of all the living entities who have accepted material bodies in this world, one who has been awarded this human form should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for dogs and hogs that eat stool. One should engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified, and when one attains this position, he attains eternal blissful life, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever. So Prabhupada often quoted that. He often quoted the verse we're reading today, especially the first two lines. And verse 4 of this chapter, he often quoted also. Nunang pramatah kurute vikarma yad indriya pritya, love for the senses, yad indriya pritya aprinoti nasadumanye yata atmanoyam asadn apiklesha asadehaha. When a person considers sense gratification, indriya priti, the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activity. He does not know that due to his past misdeeds, he has already received a body which, although temporary, is the cause of his misery. Actually, the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. Therefore, I think it not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in the activities of sense gratification, by which he perpetually gets material bodies one after another. In the verse after that, verse 5, Srila Prabhupada, not so often but fairly often, quoted the first two lines, Parabhavastavadabodhajato yavannajignyasata atmatatvam. One is defeated as long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life. So these verses are often quoted. And then text 8 of this chapter also, which I already quoted, the Pungsastriya verse. That's also one of those often quoted. I can quote it again. Pungsastriya mithuni bhavametam tayor mitho hridya grantim ahuhu ato griha kshetra sutabda vitayar janasya moho yamahammameti. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. Heavy stuff. Compulsory, mandatory reading and hearing and considering and putting into practice in our lives. Otherwise, our so-called spiritual life, it's all just theoretical or academic or has no actual substance. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Yeah. Speak loudly, please, or come closer. There's competition.
Jains also, they accept Rishabhdev as their...
Jains accept Rishabhdev as their... Well, that's, you know, you've read in the purport. Jains show symptoms of detachment, yeah? Sure they do. You pulling their hairs out from the... That's pretty austere, isn't it? Some of the Digambas, they walk around naked still today. In Gujarat, occasionally you see Jain sadhus walking around naked. Why is it exactly? I don't know. It's a historical point. Do they get some kind of punya? Do they worship him? Probably. They consider Mahavir is the biggie, and Rishabhdev is also. So. I don't know much about Jainism actually. If they, well, Prabhupada said about Lord Buddha that. Buddha denied the existence of God, and but they worship him, and because he's an avatar of Vishnu, they get the benefit. They get benefit from that. He tricked them into that. So, if the Jains worship Rishabhdev, they get some benefit. Yeah, must be. Even without proper understanding, they get some benefit. But better they worship him the proper way. They get a lot more benefit. Yeah.
Here this Vinan Yoga.
Yeah.
It is like teaching to the rebellious souls, one should not become angry.
One should not become angry with... Prabhupada gives that comment. Srila Prabhupada himself often became angry. What I understand by this is that you don't... You don't have intrinsic rejection of them. You may exhibit some anger for the sake of their purification, but you don't hate them. That's what I understand from this, because Srila Prabhupada himself, contrary to modern myth, Srila Prabhupada often got angry when preaching to people. Yeah. Brahmacharis deal closely with Mataji's from the congregation. Not recommended. Not recommended. The trouble is, if not guaranteed, but pretty close. Close dealings in preaching should be done by grihasthas. And even grihastha men, they shouldn't have very close dealings with women. Even they may do so with their husbands. I, as guru of women disciples, I tend to deal with women as a unit, along with their husbands, and all their individual personal things. I don't get into it. It's not my, I don't think it's my business. I can give general, I don't see in traditionally that acharyas got involved so much in women disciples. That's for the husband and the family members. The guru can give general directions, and he may get intimately involved with the personality of his male disciples, but not females. Even if the acharya is completely free of all mundane desire, but still, it, as a matter of teaching others, you should. It's not part of a Vedic culture that men get very much in. Even husbands and wives, they're quite separated a lot of the time in traditional culture. In the higher castes, they do religious things together, eating, procreating, of course, and then religious activities. The wife helps in the yajna and helps prepare the puja and all these things. But it's not like the modern idea, and they're fallen in love and they spend time dancing around Kashmir, or talking to each other a lot and this and that. No, I don't say that's part of the Vedic culture. From what I can see, anyway, also, men and women, they're not very, personality-wise, they're not very, they don't mix with each other very well. When they fall in love, then they, for a short time, they feel like it's wonderful, but it doesn't last very long, and that's why you're seeing cultures all over the world that men associate with men and women with women, even not for any spiritual or religious purpose, because they have different interests. The men, in the degraded place that I come from, the men went to the bars, they went to the football games, and the women, they hang around with the children, and I guess what they do, they sit and they knit together. Of course, nowadays things are different because men and women are equal, and they go to war together and all this kind of thing. But the natural way it was for so many years that men and women, they don't really relate together that well. Anyway, this is relative talks, but the general principle is that men and women should be separated as much as possible, physically, socially, and by consciousness also. I mean, that you don't get much involved with it. It's the husband's duty to protect it. You say women should be protected, but it's specifically by the grown-ups, by the father, by the husband, and by the grown-up sons. It's not the duty of anyone else. Of course, the kshatriya protects in a general way, and the whole society protects in a general way, but it's the specific duty of certain persons to do that. And if someone else tries to take it up, then you get trouble. Trouble means illicit sex or illicit attraction. And then spiritual life is spoiled. And you become then we see it again and again and again. People become bewildered. As Kapiladev says, that even the great conquerors of men, the great they conquer over great kingdoms, but the woman eyelid, she do, the eyelash, just, and they're conquered. Maya is very powerful. Hare Krishna. Shrimad